computational policy and strategy in cybersecurity is a problem, an issue for us. We tried at the end of this year and at the beginning of the next year to develop a national policy on these issues. For establishing CSERTs, we see it is necessary to build at first a national networks, especially in government organization, in other area of enterprise, ISPs, and the other universities and institutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hai. So it's lots of going on in Vietnam, but what I captured is a number of the attacks and cyber incidents are, you know, increasing, and lots of ICTs, lots of development. National certs are developed, but lack of tools and policy and strategies, network in the cert within a country, lack of those resources is a problem to the capability to actually operate. That's what I capture from Dr. Hai. Okay, so Christine, you see from Brazil?
Oh, hello. Okay, it's not working. So I'll talk mainly from the Brazilian perspective, but some of the problems I will talk here, we are starting seeing in other Latin American countries, and if they're not already there. So in Brazil, since 2001, fraud, phishing has been a big problem. So we have a lot of arrests. We have police working hard. We have the whole sector working hard, but it's really a big problem, and it's happening a lot. People are actually trying more and more, but this is a big problem. So they are trying to target the user that they realize after some years that's really the easiest one to be targeted. And everything is really involved in malicious code. So it's really hard to educate and to do awareness, because we need to do awareness not only about the malicious code, but to infected websites. We are seeing a lot more and more in Brazil to websites compromised with malicious iframes, with malicious JavaScripts, with malicious ActiveX. So actually, if the user has anything vulnerable, it's being attacked and it's being compromised. So it's really hard to deal with that, especially because everything is hosted abroad. So even we have local people targeting local institutions and the local users, the Trojans are hosted in other countries. We have that happening. So there is a lot of coordination needed, and it's really hard to do that in a timely manner. So this is a challenge we have. Another problem we see in Brazil is that there is a lack of widespread adoption of security best practices in ISPs and telecom companies. And in Brazil, the telecom companies are not ISPs, so you need coordination. We have some problems, okay, but the contract we have with our users, they don't allow us to do that or implement that other thing. So there is also a challenge on how to come with better contracts and better ways to deal with those problems and to enable people to actually do some best practices. And another problem we see is that, okay, the technical people know the best practices, but they don't have the buy-in. They don't have actually the business people in their enterprises aware of the problem and aware of why they need, so they are really needing some business cases or some other information to help them to actually prove that implementing some best practices, they would have some improvement. So we see a lot of best practices coming from FIRST, coming from ITU, coming from MOG, from some other institutions, but if you go to implement them on business, they are asking for more business cases or for more cases saying, how much does it cost, how long does it take to implement, and what's the impact into business. So this is one of the things we are seeing. And another problem big is how well trained are the personnel. Even if they know the best practices, they are implementing them in correct fashion. They actually know how to implement it. There is a lack of trained personnel to implement even the networks and the internet itself, but to implement security best practices, this is even a bigger challenge. So do you have the security personnel enough? Do you have networking people thinking about security when they're designing the network? Do you have people developing websites with security in mind not to be compromised, to be hosting malicious activity or malicious frame? So this is one of the problems about having the capacity building not only on CSERTs doing the incident coordination, but how to set up the whole infrastructure not to be vulnerable, or at least to be less vulnerable. And one of the problems that we see that kind of sums up all this is that we talk a lot about security, but actually in the enterprises and ISPs and in other institutions, NGOs, you see the business people thinking that, okay, I created a security group or I created a CSERT, so now all the problems will solve themselves. So there's a lack of really talking, the business people talking to the IT people with the CSERTs and talking with people to actually understand, why should I talk to security personnel before I go to a marketing campaign? Maybe they know that that has already been used for phishing or used for something else. So it's very important to learn from other people's mistakes and to really be aware of the impact that security has through the whole society and to the whole area. So this is one of the challenges that we have, is that we have groups, we have CSERTs, but how actually start getting all that web of people interacting and talking to not only with legislators, but with policymakers and with business people, and to make everybody understand how the problem, what the problem is and how to address it.
Thank you, Christine. Very interesting point that just creating a national cert doesn't solve the problem. You actually have to encourage and convince your constituency, industry and cooperation and enterprises and ISPs to implement the best practices, and the lack of business cases at the moment is the problem that you see in the country. That's a very interesting point. All right, George.
Information security issues. Mm-hmm. Okay. It was first suggested that I give my presentation as a set of problems and then a set of solutions, I thought, well, the problems are going to be easy to find. I'll have trouble cutting them down. The solutions will be somewhat more difficult, and I had some difficulty amassing enough of those. So I'm going to talk from a slightly more general perspective, not with respect to any given country, but with respect to the global problem of security. I found 6 points that I think are important from my perspective. The first is security is as strong as the weakest link, and the problem is we're dealing with an international, a global network here, and the weakest link can be anywhere. And so you have the behavior that we all observe of accounts being compromised in country A, the trail, the bots being put up in countries B, C, and D to attack a target in country E. That's easy to do right now because the internet is so dependent upon its linkages with all of the various networks that comprise it. And you really can't hide. There's a tradition of security through obscurity, which generally works until somebody gets clever, and it generally doesn't work after that. And so we really have to think these things through as opposed to hiding where the weak links are. The second point is that the developing countries, unfortunately, are really especially vulnerable in this case, not because they have information assets that are more important, but because their reputations depend upon them being secure. I know that you're probably aware of the fact that, at least until recently, it wasn't possible to obtain credit cards in certain Eastern European countries because of the amount of credit card fraud that was going on. Similarly, some countries have a reputation of spawning hackers, of building viruses, and so on. And if you really establish a reputation that you, a very bad reputation, there's a good chance you'll be filtered out. You'll be effectively cut off from the internet, but not by any of the network operators, but by people who will just screen your mail and filter you out and not allow you to communicate with the outside world. Third, there is a growing presence of organized criminal groups on the net, and there is a thriving business in botnet rentals. So for a fairly small sum, you can rent, for example, a botnet that will attack a million hosts for a week. So that the notion of crime for rent, you can rent an attack, and that is a very appealing for criminal groups who want, for example, to practice extortion. In other words, they go to a business and they say, give me some money, or your website just isn't going to be accessible to anybody for the next week. It's a problem, and the question there is. Do we really need basic internet infrastructure reform? There are people working on it in the United States and elsewhere. Will the present structure survive the kind of malware that's being propagated right now on it? The critical infrastructures are increasingly at risk. By critical infrastructures, I don't mean network infrastructures. I mean power, water, the other things that are equally important. There was a very scary article in, I think it was Harper's Magazine in late August, where somebody was challenged to break into a nuclear reactor control site, and the person who was challenged said, I'm never going to be able to do that. Within a week, he was controlling aspects of the reactor's behavior. He said he could not have caused an explosion, but nevertheless, if this is what's happening with nuclear reactors, one can guess that the same vulnerabilities might be present in the valves that control dams, the transformer stations, the relays that control electric power, and so on. And the fifth is there's a lack of will, apparently, to take responsibility for security. It's someone else's business. No matter who you are, it'll be taken care of somewhere else. It's my ISP's responsibility. It's the government's responsibility. You know, it's my husband's responsibility in my house. The final point is, where is Interpol when we need them? Now, that shouldn't be taken literally. I don't know if Interpol is the right organization, but it's certainly not the wrong organization. Of all the issues that are discussed at IGF, which is an international gathering, cybercrime is one of the most appropriate subjects for discussion, because it will only be conquered if there is a truly international solution to it. We need a very aggressive and professional international presence or force in order to address this topic, and I don't see one. Maybe somebody is being very clever. Maybe Interpol is doing major and good things that are invisible to all of us. But if they're not, we're in trouble. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Thank you for capturing all those different aspects of the issues. What was unique from the other panelist's point was lots of incidents are now caused by criminal activities, so there's a lack of deterrent at the moment and some law enforcement initiative needed. And also, you mentioned that the critical infrastructure dependencies to internet infrastructure, that situation is once we have the incident happens, that impact now is becoming much higher than it used to be. So that was a good point. Thank you, George. I am a call sign.
Thank you very much. My slide is shown there. First of all, I'd like to point out two issues as a Japanese situation and the issues. First one is cybersecurity collaboration. This shows the Japanese situation. The left side is as is. Not only JPSAT, but also some other information security sharing functions are established. Especially in Japan, we have four sectors in information security. First, government. Second, critical infrastructure protection, as George said. The third one is business enterprises, generally. The fourth one is general users, individuals. In this area of information security and cyber security, to establish a function of information sharing in each region is very important. Not only global collaboration, but also in domestic coordination. Not only this, as is individually works, to constitute a good partnership or some playing each role definitely clearly would be important. At least maybe there may be some point of contact in international coordination context, But some other functions are established, especially critical infrastructure protection in Japan, financial services, telecommunications, and some other industries are appointed as critical infrastructures, and their information sharing schemes work very effectively. Not only these areas, some other activities are coming up as volunteers of CSAT on general companies. If this information security and CSAT working is close within a government and CIPs, we KDALEN don't show any interest. But these activities of CSAT can be incorporated to corporate governance would be critical for the Japanese companies. This is a point of information security governance. We in Japan, we said that information security governance means build up effective IT control as an important part of corporate governance. In short, saying is very simple, but to write down what we shall do, we have to do is very, very difficult, sometimes too heavy burdens for business and enterprises. As everybody knows that cybersecurity and information security means a cost, but it also means enablers of new challenges, not only for the cost of the business, but also we'd like to make up other new challenges throughout the information security governance. This chart shows our thinking about the Japanese business enterprises, IT, whether IT users or IT providers. In the United States, IT providers are considered as a part of a CIP, but in Japan, only telecom and ISP is a CIP, but other companies shall be to some extent liable. But these activities cannot be mandatory rule, but they do establish the volunteer basis activities on information security governance. To bottom up and exaggerate these activities, to sum up the activity of volunteer basis for the effective information security governance, this culture can be completed in Japan. This is my idea. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Yamakawa-san. So even though we have created a capability now, you need to work a lot in within your country. You need to find a way how your you know, constituencies or your enterprises work together. Now, so let's move to Lison.
Thank you, Yuri. Just by way of a brief introduction, I just want to say that the U.S. has sort of structured its approach to cybersecurity around five areas. Not all very methodically, but over time. And it's captured in what we call five pillars of an approach to cybersecurity. One is the development of a national strategy. As you may know, the U.S. released a national strategy to secure cyberspace in 2003. And that provides a framework or a guideline or a roadmap for the number of things that need to be done or need to be addressed when you're talking about cybersecurity. The second part is very important is the public-private partnership because, as we have heard many times, the information infrastructure is owned and operated by the private sector for the most part, certainly in the U.S., certainly in many other countries, and increasingly so around the world. The third aspect is an incident response mechanism. In the U.S., it is U.S. CERT, but it also includes the private sector in their own network operation centers, or their groups of network operation centers, which we call information sharing and analysis centers. The fourth aspect is combating cybercrime, and the fifth aspect is general awareness about cybersecurity. So just for a framework, that's sort of how we approach it in the U.S., again, that has sort of developed over time. So in that construct, the couple things I wanted to highlight, and I'll try not to repeat anything that the other panelists have said, because it's certainly While we may look at these in a national construct, none of the problems that we're all facing are particularly unique. We might just be at different points in addressing them in our national context. The complexity of the U.S. situation, and I think the internet and our global networks overall, is really why we have forums like these to discuss them. The scope and diversity of the U.S. market and our society is really probably at the forefront of the issue for us. We have many stakeholders and actors in government and industry, many companies. The IT sector itself is very diverse. And we have many government agencies that address one aspect or another of the cybersecurity issue. Of course, the fact that the internet is global means that we can't address any of it alone, so that's another aspect of the complexity. And then, as George indicated, the user community of the IT networks, such as our critical infrastructure, such as power, water, electricity, transportation, that interdependency among sectors means that you can't address any of them in isolation anymore either. From a more technical standpoint, we talk a lot about situational awareness. What can we assess what's happening over the network so that we know what to do about it? In certain pockets, we can. Companies can look at it, or a government network can look at what's happening on their network, but there's no one single point of monitoring, shall we say, or assessing what the cyber activity is. So some kind of communication, collaboration, and cooperation is needed to make sure we have a broader picture, we have a greater understanding of exactly what the problems are. One thing that we face in the U.S., and I don't think that we're unique at all, and I think Christine brought it up, is that we need to make sure that we have a cadre of IT workforce. And not only an IT workforce, but an IT workforce that is builds security into their capability as well. And then finally, it's already been mentioned by George again in the comment about Interpol, but the need to cooperate on cybercrime is so important because the traditional borders don't exist. And so how do you possibly deal with a criminal in another country that may be attacking something in your country? So that kind of cooperation is desperately needed as well. So I'll leave it there for Yuri until we move on.
Thank you, Liesl. So what I found very interesting from your sharing was, we're not looking at the, I'm going to go with Alan after this, but we see a lot of different issues, but it's not that we are addressing the different issues, but we are in a different point. So when we are thinking about where is the root problem, what's the, problem that we see, it's all same, but since we are in a different point of developing the development of the internet infrastructures, we see the problems differently. So that's probably help to the next. Alan, what do you see in your country, in your region, in Africa?
Yes, thank you. I'm going to give an overview of the situation in Africa, not my country, because I don't have country. I'm from Benin. I'm living in Togo, working for AFRINIC, so I don't have a territory. So I'll give you an overview of the situation in Africa. As you may know, Africa also, since 1990, has internet revolution. So with internet penetration in Africa. But the goals were providing connectivity services, not security. So that gave us what we have now. We have most of the time infrastructure without security mechanisms in place. And this infrastructure usually in very difficult environment in Africa with very limited resources. When I talk about resources, I mean PC servers, switches, router, and connectivity. So the other issue are maintaining tools, operating system, and the application up to date. When you don't have license, when you are using proprietary software but you don't have a license, it's difficult to get the update, to get the patches, the update. And even when you have the rights to download, bandwidth is an issue. So you cannot download the patches to upgrade your system. So you are still vulnerable for security attacks. In Africa, it's very difficult to get access to the security information because of a lack of a computer emergency response team. Currently, only Tunisia has a CERT. So if you look at Africa, we have about 54 countries, and only one has a CERT. So getting information, access to the security information is not easy in Africa. Lack of qualification of technicians, mainly in security aspect. People, as I said at the beginning, people are most interested in how to build mail servers, web servers, etc., etc. Security is not the first goal. It's just to get the machine up and running and then get users to use them. sorry. Absence of security procedure and strategy at national level. Even when you ask the biggest ISP in our countries, largest company, do you have a security strategy, security plan? Most of the time, what you could have is a backup plan. This is how we back up our data, but not a proper security procedure and strategy. Security budget in company are non-existent most of the time. So, because there is no strategy, so we don't worry about having a budget, train people to evaluate the security security procedure in place, security mechanisms in place. And the other problem we have are the users. Users are not educated, and as you may know, even if you deploy the very, very good security mechanism and then the users, you don't have, the user have no idea on how to use them, and they always click yes. This action may compromise your computer. Do you want to continue? Yes or no? Yes. Always yes. Lack of legislation and law on cyber security and cybercrime. Absence of collaboration between different stakeholders in our region, government, private sector, civil society, et cetera, et cetera. And then globally what we have is our infrastructure in Africa generate zombies and computer for people to recruit, to build botnet. And they used the machine here to launch attack again system in the US and Europe. So Africa's system are not really the target. So if you attack a server in Africa, nobody will talk about it at CNN or BBC. So, but the most interesting for people is to get zombie, to recruit zombie from Africa, then build botnet and use that network to attack maybe Yahoo, CNN, or Microsoft. So everybody, the world will be aware of something's happened. Okay. So most of the time, the infrastructure in Africa are not the target. They are more used as zombie, as a botnet to help the people to launch attack again. Maybe people in US, Japan, etc., more in the developed countries. So, but because our infrastructure is under very limited resources, when you are used as botnet, so you are at the same time you are victim because people are just using the limited resources you have to launch attack again people outside. So that is globally the situation in Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing the issues that you see in Africa and region. So again, I would like to back to that point. really starting from, you know, African region to Asia Pacific, Latin America, you know, Africa, Japan, sorry, American region and Japan and America, United States. It's really, we're just in a different point of developing the infrastructure. So seeing the issues of the end user's problem to a very complexity of dependency on the critical infrastructure, on the internet, that's just a different point that you are in. So that means there's a lots of lesson learned. I'm sure Japan, you know, United States, all this, you know, Brazil, many, many, many mistakes that, you know, we made to getting to that point. So there's a lots of lesson learned that we can share so that, you know, the developing countries and nation can learn not to have the made the same mistake. So now to sharing that issues, I would like to go to what's the solutions. We just identify the issues. Now we're getting into, would like to discuss what's the possible solution you think you see to address these issues, or what do you want to solve your problems. So starting from Dr. Hai again.
So about the solution, I think we can have a different point of view on this, on the solutions, because belonging to the organization is a government organization or enterprise or other organization in the society. On the government point of view, I can see the first is a key idea. We should not obstruct the development of ICT is our key idea. And among several solution possibilities, I can mention about 4 points. The first one is the involvement of government in all activities. That means we should increase or modify the law in the demand of the cybersecurity issues. Belonging to this solution, we in our country we have to have to build the national policy or strategy in this year and the next year. The second point is very important for us, and I think also for other countries in the Asian Pacific region, is human resource development, because we currently we don't have enough staff capacity to for emergency response, and also the issues with the training of the staff or the experts. And for this, we think we should have more awareness training programs. The third point is about the technical issues. We should implement the technical standardization process and implement the best practice. And the fourth, also the last, is cooperation between different CSERTs, or to build CSERT network at a national, and to set up the link for sharing information between CSERTs at international level. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hai. Let's move to Christine.
Going back to this one that's working. So I think this is not the whole stack of solutions. So as George was saying, it's hard enough to try to come up with solutions, and it's even harder to try to come up with solutions in one slide. So, and it was even harder because Yuri said, do you have any solutions that would be practical and that could be implemented? So yeah, we all have solution. So I try to start with something that usually we discuss solutions with something after the fact and with something quick and with something that could address the now. And for example, for one of the problems that we pointed, that was a problem with fraud and with malicious code, spam has a big impact. So we are dealing with that problem now that you have the whole networks and ISPs and DSLs, and you have millions of users going online, and they don't have the awareness or the technical capability of protecting themselves. So we try to come up with the implementation of some best practices to actually try to do some high-level work in that, like monitoring, try to do bot identification, some anti-spam measures like port 25, message reputation. So actually try to, we will not be able to stop, but maybe do that more traceable, being able to track who is doing that, where is it coming from, because today what's going is that, yeah, it's a lot of criminal activity in part because it's very easy for them to remain anonymous, to exploit machines of end users compromised. So they actually, it's hard to get them because they have a whole networks of anonymity around them. So these are some of the practical things that we have been used with, we have been seen in use with success in some networks, and we are trying to bring to Brazil and trying to talk with some other Latin American countries that that is maybe something we can do now. That's not the solution, but could be a part of best practice or at least reducing the problem. And then the second and third bullet, they are more long term, but actually they are some of the biggest points we have today, that we don't have people, enough people trained, but in part we don't have actually the universities training people to think about security. People, they are getting to graduation and they never are taught about secure software development, about how to project software with security in mind, what do they do to, they get requisites of use of software, but not security requisites of use of software. So then we see what we are seeing today, that we have thousands of vulnerabilities each year, and usually they come down to the same essential problems. But if you go to university curriculums, at least in Brazil and Latin America, you don't see anyone talking about network security or information security, and even less talking about secure software development or thinking about the security problems you can encounter when you have your software being developed. And then you have the demand problem, that no one is actually demanding. Everybody was going to buy a software with a new feature, but very few people are going to buy a software because it has better security, but maybe is not that pretty or doesn't have that many features. So it's really a shift in the industry. So this is long term, but this is part of the solution. We are talking a lot about standards and security, but at the end, someone will be implementing the standards and using best software practices and bad programming and introducing problems, even if you have good standards or if you have something else. So it's not just network configuration. So this is some of the problems we can't forget. So it's not easy, but it's something that needs to start at some point for you in the future, have people actually building better programs and better software for us. So, and we're talking about having national incident response coordination points or CERTs or CSERTs. In Brazil, we have our CERT is 10 years old now, so we have been in the road for a long time now, and we have been helping teams to build, but if you don't have teams capable or IT security people, CSERTs in the networks actually doing the work and coordinating the work being done, doesn't only having the national point is not enough. So you need to have something more and you need that people to coordinate. So these are really pointers to the solution and not actually, I think, solutions by itself. Thanks.
I'll take that mic.
Thank you, Christine.
Okay. Right. Solutions?
Yes, okay. Solutions. George?
Well, there are four points I want to make here. And the first is the discouraging one. There is no magic solution. Or as my colleague Jim Dempsey said yesterday in a workshop on access, he said, nothing is new under the sun. That is, we know the answers, we know the issues, and we have to start working to implement them. But there are some things we can do. And that is, the first thing is that we need a change in mindset, that security really has to be understood as everyone's problem. Let me tell you an anecdote. In 2002, a group of us who were curious about what we could do to help the security situation, we went to InfoDev, we got some money, and we wrote a book, and we published it, and there's a copy up here if you're interested in looking at it later. It's called Information Technology Security Handbook, and it's available free from the World Bank, and it's online. So we took the manuscript to the World Bank, and it has chapters, security for individuals, security for businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And the bank said, this is pretty big. We really should publish this as three or four separate books. And all the authors said, absolutely not. You have to publish this together, because if you break it up, you ruin the ability of any one group to understand that other groups have obligations also, and that we all have to work together in order to make security work. And finally, we won. They published it. But the responsibility is shared and ubiquitous. The second point I want to make is has already been made, I think, that we need the growth of certs for several reasons. One, they're able to speak authoritatively in the same language and culture to their country. Second, it's a place where human capital formation can occur, and where more information, where learning can occur, and we can propagate a whole group of people who understand security problems and can react to them. The issue in the less developed countries is you have to be sustainable, and it's very tempting to make an initial investment in a CERT and then or CCERT and then have it languish and not survive, or not stay up to date technically, not communicate as well as it should with its neighbors, and so on. The third point is that cybercrime legislation is badly behind in many countries. This legislation needs to be technologically neutral, and by that I mean it shouldn't depend whether a crime is done electronically or physically. It's still a crime. Whether I pick your pocket or whether I rob your bank account and transfer the bits that represent the money out silently, it's robbery, and it should be treated in the same way. And there are a number of countries I'm familiar with where the legislation is so specific with regard to the way in which a crime is committed that there has had to be a major push to invent new legislation to cover cybercrimes. That shouldn't be the way it is. The same legislation should cover both. We know that all forms of human behavior have migrated to the net, both for good and for bad. Therefore, a criminal code is going to have to cover all forms of human behavior, no matter whether whether the crimes are committed in the old way or the electronic way. Then, secondly, I would argue that the punishment needs to be proportional to the damage. And looking at the fines and the punishment meted out in the United States, in particular, where I live, I find that's not nearly the case. When I see that a spammer has been fined $10,000 or $20,000, I say, look at the amount of damage he has really done in terms of the opportunity cost of the time, the bandwidth, et cetera, that he's produced. A more dramatic example of this area of why reform is needed is the love bug in the Philippines. This is about 4 or 5 years ago when two Filipino hackers released something. They didn't quite know that it was going to do what it did, but the estimates of damage worldwide at the end were something like $2 billion. And it turned out that they were unprosecutable under Philippine law because the law did not include cyber crimes. So there was a crime in itself in the way in which the legislation was put together. Finally, I'd argue that we're going to have cyber crimes, and the judicial branch needs to come up to speed in terms of its ability to deal with it. Police forces need to have forensic training to understand how to deal with digital evidence, to maintain a trail of evidence from the crime to the point where one can say something definitive about why it happened and who did it. The training should include judges who are frequently called upon to interpret during trials, whether something is relevant or not. And without training, it's going to be very difficult for them to do so. So those are four points which are my contribution to solutions. They're necessary. They're not sufficient.
Thank you, George. Okay, let's move to the next resolution. Can you see the... now it's very dark.
Maybe it's not my solutions, but I would like to start my speech. And regarding the solutions, I joined such a kind of a discussion in cybersecurity and privacy, it is said that there is no single effective solution. There is no silver bullet for security and privacy. Any single solution cannot be effective for security and privacy issues for all stakeholders. Even a chart I shown in the screen is not effective without collaboration on the self-regulation basis risk management. Regarding developed areas, business corporations should think, make clear which is regulation and which is risk management for our sake. To merge these activities should be a very good corporate governance. Throughout establishing IT management, we would like to establish a good corporate governance by IT. It would be a good solution for cybersecurity and privacy. Apart from these areas, to speak of developing countries and economies, especially from the Japanese companies, is now trying to the outsourcing businesses to Southeast Asia companies and Africa companies, sometimes East Asian companies. In such cases, business corporations in such area is requested to have enough information security, like the same level as information security governance. Sometimes we request to outsource partners to have a very enough security level to shown by a security audit or privacy marks and some other self-regulations. Not only throughout the dialogue between government level, throughout the national CSAT, such a business dialogue can be established a very good culture and the foundation of real culture of security in these areas, not only Southeast Asia, Africa, Latin America, and all areas. So in this sense, I'd like to say that this is IGF Internet Governance Forum. All stakeholders are gathering here, not only the active parties, but also all stakeholders can think, what can we do for this problem? In these areas, and to join and to conform some of the new activities, it would be a very good simulation, simulate for the IGF of these issues. I don't mean that this is a political activity; it's just a volunteers discussion. This is my solution.
Okay, thank you.
Well, once again, many of the items that I would want to touch on have already been discussed, so I'll try to be brief. I think we've all heard that collaboration and communication across the multiple stakeholders is crucially important, so those public-private partnerships that I mentioned earlier are part of the solution. I know that in other countries, such as Brazil and Vietnam, that has been incorporated into their thought process of how to address the internet in their advisory groups or working groups, and we certainly have done the same thing. So that is one thing I would say that as we all look to address cybersecurity in our national and international frameworks, that's something we prioritize. Another aspect is that, as I mentioned, there's not enough situational awareness in any one entity. So we need to be able to enable mechanisms that are provide a trusted environment for sharing information and an ability to collaborate to combat the malicious activity And that needs to happen both domestically as well as internationally, as we've heard. As we've heard, there's no one magic, one silver bullet or no one magic solution. And there's also no way that we can have complete security. I think that that notion is also problematic for us. So what we need to look at is how do we undertake a risk management approach to critical infrastructure protection, so not only in the cyber area or not only in the IT sector, but in any sector that is addressing its risks. How does the IT component or the cyber component add to those risks, and how can you mitigate those as you are looking to implement best practices or cybersecurity solutions? You can't fix all the problems, so look at what are the threats to your environment, what are your vulnerabilities to those threats, what are the consequences should those threats be exploited, and then make an assessment of how you mitigate them, and hopefully that helps to drive the business case for where you invest your resources. We've talked about improving the education aspect of ICT development and including security in that in that element, and I can't emphasize that enough. It's not a sub-bullet, but it's its own bullet. But establish or evolve laws to reflect the needs to combat cybercrime. I'll take a slightly different tack than George and say that even if a law looks like it may be applicable to both non-internet crime, you know, non-online crime, or and could be applicable, it may actually cause its own problems as well. So in the U.S., we're looking at adjustments to our cybercrime laws to say, to deal with the amount of money, for example, or the burden of proof that's required for a cybercrime, because so many times it can be anonymous and or it can be spread over over many locations. So even state lines, which are currently written in our laws, cause a problem when you're dealing with cybercrime. So if you need to evolve them to encompass the cyber component, I would say that's a worthwhile endeavor as well. There's two recommendations that I don't think we in the U.S. are doing enough of either, but I'm taking this opportunity to make the recommendations and in this forum. One is to leverage existing international forums for international cooperation, information sharing, and sharing of these experiences and the expertise that countries and organizations have developed over time. There are a number of places where these kinds of things are being discussed, whether it's the Forum for Incident Response Security Teams, whether it's MOG, whether it's AFRINIC. These discussions are happening among both the technical and the policy community, and I think that's an important message that this group needs to, we want to make sure that this group understands as they look to and to deal with it in their own national constructs. And then finally, perhaps we can look at the existing ways in which we help other countries or get help from other countries and build the cyber component into those things. There are many ways that countries or organizations can get grants, grant funding, can do training and other education forums. So to the extent that we can leverage those to build cyber into those programs, I think we will be better off.
Thank you, Ezel. Now, Alain, would you like to add?
Yes. Once again, I'll focus in African perspective, and I think we all agree that to improve internet security, we need global and international cooperation, and if we want Africa to play a role in that system, I think what is really needed is capacity building, decision-making level, and at technical level. Okay, in Africa, we are AFNOG level, AFRINIC, we are running workshop on security, technology, et cetera. UN Economic Commission for Africa having workshop for the ministers, for the policymakers, and Bahrain had two workshop. ITU also is organizing workshop in Cape Verde at the end of November, et cetera, et cetera. But more need to be done, and I think we'll call once again our donors to help us. We really need capacity building awareness, and that is, I think that is what is really needed in Africa now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I captured a couple points in the solutions that that all the panelists shared with us. So just very quickly summarize, identified what type of issues and information security out there we just shared. Stable, so what Alain shared with us, unstable and insecure internet. From that status to general issues, number of attacks, increasing, the impact are becoming higher. Dr. Hai mentioned there is a national point of contact for cyber incident response, but lack of tools and policies and resources to operate, actually. And it's not operating, there's, you know, yes, there is established something, but it's not operating, then, you know, that's an issue there. And also, a general issue, incidents are caused by criminals and lack of deterrent. And now, Christine's point, even if the national CERTA are capable, and I have to say CERT BIAL is one of the very leading, very capable CERT in the world, doing lots of model analysis and lots of good things. They're very capable, but still lack of in the community, lack of incentives and business cases to encourage enterprises, ISPs, and government to implement best practices. Then that's also still a lot to going on. I need to work on. And then, even if there are enterprises, industry start implementing best practices, now you need to find a way to work within your own country is one of the issue. And also, lastly, complexity of the old dependency of the critical infrastructure, that's the next issue. So, Elaine mentioned at the last, but capability, building, is one of the things that we can start internationally, international cooperation to help developing countries to start building the capability. So establish at least one national point of contact for the cybersecurity incident response. It's probably one of the things that the international incident response community would like to see. And what I hear from Liesl was there are many tools, and there are a lot of some CERT people here. We know that there are many tools and workshops and trainings, best practices available. We've developed a lot and sharing in a community, but it's not outreaching. Those tools are not delivered to a place where we need to deliver. So how do we like to bring and deliver them to a place where they need? And also how to outreach to those developing countries where they need those tools? That's one of the challenge, because yes, there is FIRST, yes, there is, NOGS, workshops, meetings, but it's very difficult for them to travel, paying membership, and getting to the community and put into network. So I would like to ask this question to the panelists. Anybody have some ideas how to, practically solve this problem? Anybody?
Well, I think I touched on just one aspect that is a possibility, is to use the existing either grant making or capacity building mechanisms that may or may not include cybersecurity as part of their construct today. We've talked about in the past using the World Bank as an option or other grant-making organizations to, you know, build power plants and other transportation infrastructure. To the extent that we can include cyber into that, I think that would take us another step forward. Certainly, though, that requires the countries that may be looking for assistance to take steps to make that a priority in their country and put that on the list of things that they would want to receive assistance on. So it's really a two-way street there. Obviously, I'm not from a grant-making organization, so I make no promises in that regard, but I think it's something we could all work toward.
Those fellowship program type of things to help those countries to travel and then even attend. It's very useful. Yes, comment?
Thank you. I've been doing some policy study on the governance of the information security for some 3 years as my day job. And one of the topics very much interested for today's panel is international cooperation and governance. My question is that for all the solutions, one element seemingly lacking to me, under the Internet Governance Forum, we agreed that it should be multi-stakeholder, multilateral, transparent, and democratic. Most solutions don't really involve the users of the civil societies, maybe not in an explicit, intentional manner, but is it very intentional or left out or what? And my question is a little bit blunt, but if you understand what I mean. There are very few actual workings like the first don't really involve the users, with good reasons perhaps. Many other, it is such a sensitive area sometimes, and also highly technical and highly complex, that the public interest is very difficult to get involved, especially from the civil society. So if you have any idea about that. The second question is, sorry for taking the, many people emphasize the importance of the international cooperation, but how many people are working day-to-day basis solely on the international cooperation, or how much money is there? Usually the most security agencies domestically are busy in dealing with their own domestic issues. I mean, to DHS or Japanese National Information Security Center or ENISA in person, there are very few people actually in charge of the international cooperation, and their funding is relatively limited to than they want to. So these are the perhaps areas we need to further explore. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
No, I just would like to comment on his comment. So, I don't know if I got it right. You said it's not multi-stakeholder. So my organization is multi-stakeholder by itself. So the Brazilian Internet Steering Committee is formed by civil society, NGOs, government, telecommunication companies. And a lot of our work is just done in producing information to give to end users and to give to the civil society as a whole. So most of the CSERTs, they are small teams, and most of what they do is actually to address the needs of a community. So in our case, we do international cooperation on a day-to-day basis. So we cooperate to first, we share a lot of information about threats, and each team further that to their constituency, and this is something that we do on a day-to-day basis. So we are touching the civil society, trying to reach information out to the public and trying to get information and we are research partners with the anti-phishing working group, where we are trying to get information back from the international community and applying that locally to our end user community. So these are some of the things that we are doing. And regarding, for example, training that you were talking about, as for us, it was difficult to get grants to get people to travel abroad. The Brazilian Internet Steering Committee decided to get the training back to Brazil, so we licensed training from other institutions, and we are providing them at cost fee, so it's just like recover cost basis. So we are training a lot of people, hundreds of people a year, in instant response and instant handling. So in a way, we are trying to form these teams that will work more directly with the civil society and with the NGOs. Just this is an example on how we are dealing straight, trying to touch all the areas.
So I'd also like just to make two quick comments on it. As I mentioned, awareness, and I'm public awareness, so for the general society, is part of the approach in the U.S., and there are two aspects to that. One is certainly what is you know, the government doing to help raise awareness, and we have some campaigns that government agencies work on with regard to informing the individual user. For example, the Federal Trade Commission has an awareness campaign. The Department of Homeland Security has an awareness campaign for the public. In addition, there's a public, a private sector nonprofit organization that has been pulled together called the National Cybersecurity Alliance, and they work with companies and with government to inform the users. I think what we don't see is a big groundswell of users coming together to address the issues in any national context. However, there are groups that represent the civil society that are taken into consideration in some of these international organizations, which is the second point I want to make. That, for example, the OECD has a stakeholder groups both in industry, in trade unions, and in civil society, and they are hugely part of the dialogue. For example, in the upcoming ministerial in Seoul in 2008, they will have a stakeholder day and address all the aspects of the future of the internet, which is the ministerial theme, and security is part of that. So it does exist. It's extremely difficult. It is a grassroots effort, and it's not easy, but there are steps being taken.
Thank you, Liesl. Sir?
Thank you. With the chair's permission, I would like to make three comments. I hope they are quick, but feel free to cut me off, because I feel very strongly about this. I know I tend to like to hear my own voice, so. Oh, let's start with that. So, thank you, first of all. My name is Gadi Evron. I'm with Afilias, and I have three comments to make. The first and most important one is that I've been extremely pleased with the fact that, for example, yesterday, I've been extremely pleased with the fact that the IGF is speaking security. You have all spoken about awareness. We have all spoken about how much awareness is important. I usually would like to agree, I usually would love to preach user education, but we all know how difficult to impossible it is. Awareness on the political level is what I want to comment on, so I better start doing that. Estonia. Let's start there. So I was in Estonia during May, and I wrote the postmortem and recommendations for the Estonians on the internet war. And not talking, we have a session about that tomorrow in case studies, but more important than that, the one thing it taught us was what we currently define, forget incident response. I mean, again, I'm not dissing on incident response. Let's put it aside for a second. We spoke about it for an hour. The one thing Estonia taught us, and I'm starting to get organized, is
could you speak up a little bit?
The one thing Estonia really taught us is that what we define as critical infrastructure is not, maybe critical infrastructure, SCADA systems, air traffic control, yes, absolutely, they're critical infrastructure, but not what was attacked in Estonia, not what made the big impact. What made the big impact over there, what needed to be defined as critical infrastructure, was the private and business sector. It was the banks. It was the ISPs. Let's not even go to regulation right now, although who would you go to help with your attack when you're attacked? And more important than that, even news websites. Now, once we realized that the business sector was as important, if not more important, as the critical infrastructure, as the, let's say, military, civil, etc., SCADA systems, critical infrastructure, there was another realization, a realization many of us have had over the years and immediately dismissed, which was, user computers, each and every one of these user computers, let's say this mass, this cesspool mass of uneducated smart people, or say educated but not aware smart people, okay, stupid people, are basically our critical infrastructure. In Estonia, there were two main attacks. Of course, this went on for a while. One was from outside the country, whether by botnets or other sources, and then from inside the country. So defining critical, yesterday there was this session, and I'm done with the comment, I promise, about critical internet resources. And the entire 2 hours were spent bashing ICANN. And I don't know about you guys, but I was pissed. So
did you speak up then, is what I want to know.
No. Now, the two important things, I'll cut it short. I made my comment. Now, let me contribute a little bit. You spoke of cooperation. Cooperation is important. Information sharing is important. Incident response is important. Let me say it again. Cooperation is important. Cooperation is important. I agree. In fact, I doubt anybody in this room would disagree that cooperation is important, because we learned that our security, however good we may be at it, is reliant on somebody else's.
Yes.
But, and this is the critical issue here, we have been saying that now for 6, 10 years. We've gotten pretty good at cooperation. Honestly, most of the real cooperation is going on below the scenes. We have actual groups such as FIRST, which has been there for a while. They do good jobs, but honestly, now there are only a few people who share. There's Rob Thomas, there's Ian Cook from London, who share information over there, but it's a good group, a good base for contacts. We have MOG, that's a great group of people and contacts. And then we have all the underground groups, sorry for calling them that, which bring us to the problem. Real internet cooperation does not need to be created. Yes, give me 30 seconds, I'm done. Real internet cooperation does not need to be created. It's already here. The problem is, it's based on goodwill. It's based on people like you and me, who in our free time control that aspect of the internet. And what we really need is leadership, and we need to take it from goodwill-based relationships to something real. Because honestly, and this is my final sentence, I promise, in the past 6 years, although we've all worked hard, I don't want to come out wrong in this. We've all worked hard, we have had achievements in our own backyard. We have completely, no matter how hard we worked and what our achievements were, failed. We made no difference whatsoever. What we have tried did not work. We basically get slapped, and then we write an analysis about it. I want to say we lost the war, and this is where I end, but we never actually fought. And it's time to start fighting, and if we're here at IGF, I'd really like to learn how operational people like me can talk with policymakers,
yes,
so we can start making it happen. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much for your comment. That's a very good comment. Thanks for pointing out that. That's good. I see last comment, gentleman from there. The saving of time, we actually over time, but we started 5 minutes later than that, so last. Yeah.
There was another workshop this morning that talked about the Council of Europe Convention, and just to get a sense from some members of the panel, Liesl and George, as to what their impressions of the Council of Europe Convention's applicability and appropriateness for the international standard would be, because I know that George spoke about legislation in developing countries and others. This is interesting for us in Pakistan because we're trying, as business and civil society, not as government, interestingly enough, to try and say that the Council of Europe Convention is the standard. And instead, we're being hit across and slapped across the face, as the gentleman said, by policymakers who just don't understand what exactly security is, and they don't understand the intricacies of it. And so, business is fighting hard. So, what is your impression of the Council of Europe Convention in this context? Thank you.
I really don't have any comment on it. I'm not. Is this working?
Yeah.
I really don't have any comment on it because I don't understand it well enough. I'm not concerned about discussing the specific aspects of any organization's policies at the moment. I'd rather concentrate on the needs, what we need to do to help ameliorate the security issues we face.
All right. Two words?
From my perspective, I'd like to say that it is a good baseline to begin with. It's hard for me to say that its applicability is widely used, but it, one thing that or would make the most sense in every case. But what it does is provide a guideline, and if you do either adopt the convention or laws that are equally or even more so address cybercrime, then I think you've taken a large step forward. So it's not the be it end all, but it's a reference point.
Right. Thank you very much for everybody. I think we found a very good point today. Lots of issues that we're facing, and there's no silver bullets to solve all these problems or issues. There's no silver bullets, but there's a lot of things that we can do together to cooperate, sharing best practices, tools, resources, funding. There's lots of ideas, and part of it's again, it's a broadened approach to addressing cybersecurity. There's no silver bullets, but broadened approaches from the technical issues to legislation and policymakers and law enforcement and everybody. Mindset, it's a very good point. Mindset and the user's problem too. Everybody has to be aware that you are liable of something using internet infrastructure, internet. So with that, I would like to close the panel, and there's a lot of solutions being proposed. So if any, you know, volunteer stakeholders would like to try the, you know, case study and bring back as a, you know, success story next year, I'm happy to, you know, see that. So thank you very much. I would like to close the panel with this. Thank you.